And now I'd like you to greet somebody who I've known and admired for a very long time, and somebody I consider a friend, Sharon B. from Los Angeles.
Evening, I'm Sharon Barker. I'm an alcoholic. And, I brought the sunshine promise tomorrow. Tomorrow, 9 a.m., it'll be up. So I'm still not a morning person, so it's going to be fun at 9 a.m. I'm up and in the world. I just don't know how with it I am. I'm usually driving to work in L.A., and I do that. I work for a living today, and that's a good thing. My parents are happy I became self-supporting through my own contributions. And I'm sure the IRS is very happy, and, various other people are happy. So it's a privilege to be here. Thank you to the West Portland group very much. And thank you, Chris and Barb, for picking me up and being such good hosts and hostesses. And I've got grandbabies in the room from Eugene, and Tom saw me get sober in the Pacific group. He's got one more year on me, so he watched me come in. I guess there's a rumor going out there I have more time than I have, so this, a rumor that I'm 37 years sober. That would make me 3 when I got sober, so. Actually, I'm 30 years, 5 months, and 1 day, and so every day is just another step away from what I was when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, and it's a step away from active alcoholism. Alcoholism centers in the mind, so if you're new, let me get your attention for a second, because you'll probably go right back up there into that squirrel cage. So if you're new, and there's, I think, how many do we count? 14? 14 new people. Make your feet your friend. Take care of your feet. Keep them warm. Buy them cashmere socks, manicure them, pedicure them. Love your feet, because they will get you to a meeting. Your head will tell you, I've got to stay home because this headache really is the brain tumor. Your head will tell you they don't really understand nobody drank green chartreuse like me. Your head will tell you, they just want to control my life. Your head will tell you a lot of things because alcoholism centers in the mind, and it takes a long time to kind of work through that rat's nest up there and sort out who's on your side and who's not on your side. If you're anything like me, we're all kind of sibyls here, you know. We've got... It's like, I grew up in Iowa, I know it was my first resentment, but I had the same school bus driver for years and years and years. And that, my head is like that bus of all the kids I got on, all the same neighbors every year, and my dad would walk out of the house with a little calendar with a date circled, you know, in order of how we were born, and we would get on the school bus, he'd have that 8mm, and every year, it was the same kids. And in the back of the bus, they were the Clark boys, the Pitlick boys, the ones that would put gum in my hair and tell me there's no Santa Claus and eat my food and take my school books and call me gooseneck. You know, they were always in the back of the bus. My dad panned that camera. And I still have a bus, a head like that. And in the back of the bus... They're there, ready for me to go back and sit and have them put gum in my hair again. But I choose to sit in the front, because in the front by Laverne Herbst, the driver was always juice. We had comic books. We had a little heater he'd turn on. He had a radio, and the view was better. The view was better, and you got to get off first. But my head is like that bus, and I still every once in a while have to go in the back and sit there. And alcoholism is alive and well in the dredges of my mind. It's still there. I just don't feed them after midnight. I don't play with them as much. I don't bring them out. I have learned to sit in the front and let God do the driving. It's been a lot more fun that way. But alcoholism, I probably lost you. The newcomers are with me. I can see the old timers glazing over, right? So the whole point is don't listen to that bus in your head of people, you know. And as you stay more sober, every once in a while, that emergency door in the back of that yellow school bus will open up and one of those people will fly out, you know. It's like, yeah, that defect left. Wow, you know. And every once in a while, then the bus will pick it up again. But, you know, I thought the green-eyed monster left me. Jealousy's back. More work to do. So that's why I'm active in Alcoholics Anonymous, because I have one of those heads. If you just stayed with me through any of that, welcome to Alcoholics Anonymous. I love my feet. My feet still get me to work. They get me to answer the phone. They go to my sponsor's house. They get me to my meetings. They do my commitments. They get me to work. They have me make my family food. They do laundry. My feet, but my head, it's like, my name is Sharon. It means princess. Come on. I can start there and keep on going, So I am glad I'm an active member of Alcoholics Anonymous, and there's a lot of active members here because, I want to hang out with people that want to be in the center of it. I was a more kind of alcoholic, and I'm a more kind of sober alcoholic. I was a more drinker, and I'm a more kind of sober alcoholic. I love sitting next to the fire. I love it, And what we have going on here is brand new lives. We get brand new lives. It's just by seconds and inches that you were lucky enough to come sit in the room. And if you're new, you're going, yeah. But you know what? 10 people tonight are sleeping better that they know you're sitting in the room of AA. So it's not about you. Sorry. But, it takes a while to get that. But that you're in the room of Alcoholics Anonymous is a precious, precious gift. Because probably you walk outside, you throw a stone, there's an alcoholic somewhere right in the vicinity who will never have the privilege of hearing the music of Chapter 5. Will never have the privilege of knowing that there is a solution. Will never have the privilege of that identification of one alcoholic talking to another alcoholic. Because when I came to my first meetings and you were telling my secrets from the podium, I thought, how do they know? How do they know that's how I feel? How do they know I'm lonely in a crowd my whole life? How do they know that I don't fit in my family, even though I love my family, I have a great family? How do they know those things about me? The guy at my first meeting said he waited for the spaceship to land and say, you can come home now, Bill. Oh, a spaceship watcher like me. They told him to say that. It was my first meeting, and I thought, they told him to say that. Who knows that I was that little girl in Iowa waiting for the mothership to come back? And I was. I was. I am the only alcoholic in my family. And that still confuses a lot of people. And when I was new in AA, and it's okay if your family doesn't get it too. I was in AA. Sharon's in AA. it doesn't mean Sharon's in SDS or Sharon's hanging with the Black Panthers or, Sharon just marched on Washington again. Or wasn't that her in the news program or disrupting the courtroom? It's like Sharon's in AA. It was. Kind of a funny thing, but we broke them in. My parents, the quality of friends that came to visit me after sobriety was just very much more welcome than the quality of friends that I had before I got sober. So welcome if you're new. This is our big drive month. We get a lot of people in here, and but it's a day at a time. It's a day at a time, and it's a day at a time for me as it is for you, because. But a day well lived, and when I put my pillow on that head at night and I know that I was of service today for somebody I didn't like, when I showed up at work and everything inside of me said, take that day off, it's Cary Grant Day on TCM, Call in sick. Answer that phone, that annoying baby who's whine. And I answered the phone and I acted right and I gave experience instead of anger. That, I walked my dog even though I was tired, and I put my head on the pillow at night. A day well lived. A day when I get some self-worth. I had no self-worth. Nobody came and took it away from me, but I just didn't have it. I didn't have it growing up. I always felt like I didn't have enough. Like whatever it wasn't enough. And when I discovered alcohol sitting on a 57 Chevy on a country road in Iowa, Canadian Club in Schlitz Beer with those Clark boys. They let me hang out with them, those boys in the back. And the football players and the cheerleaders and Jeanette Andrews with her mohair sweater tucked into her shorts. Why was she wearing a mohair sweater? It's hot. It's summer. Yeah, Miss 38D had it down, But by the time that Canadian Club and that Schlitz hit my little trainer bra, move over, Jeanette Andrews. I'm in town. I'm in charge, and I'm in town, because that's what whiskey did for me. From the tip of my head to the tip of my toes, whiskey was spiritual. I was looking for what the spirits of alcohol did for me. It filled me up. It allowed me to not have those voices. We all got down to one voice, which was, let's party. They all got just focused. Let's party. And alcohol was working for me for a long time. But as I went down the path of my drinking, I had to give up some things. And it's not like I made a conscious decision. You know, everything that I've learned has been through step work and working with others and sitting in meetings and living life in the world. Everything that I've learned here, my perspective and my perceptions and my ahas are all from being living life. I didn't sit there at the Mountain Man Bar near Aspen, Colorado, and when the bartender asked for my dignity, basically, is what happened that night. That was it. I didn't make a conscious decision. Dignity, no dignity. I just said, give me my alcohol, because alcohol was king in my life. And I gave up an art degree. I gave up an art school. I gave up musical ability. I gave up love of my family. I gave up a lot of pets had to go by the wayside because I was drinking and in blackouts and not taking care of things. And did I make a conscious decision to hurt people and things? No, I didn't. But alcohol ruled my life. Alcohol was very powerful when I put it in my body. And I wasn't done until I was done. And I, you know, it talks about a lot of, if you're new, there's chapter 3. It talks about our escapades. There's a lot of identification in that. I always loved the taking a trip, not taking a trip. That would be my favorite bumper sticker. I don't know why, but you know, that would be my favorite bumper sticker, because I would go sit in a bar one night, and at 10 o'clock at night, someone would say, how's it going, and how do you like living in New Orleans? And I'd say, great. Love it here. Got a good bartending job, because I can drink as I tend bar. Got a tab at the Bastille. Got a tab at Funky Butts. Got a tab at the Huddle. I got a tab at Johnny White's. I got a tab. You got a tab at my bar? It's great. I'm having a great time. I got 2 days off. I'm going to play whatever I want in the jukebox. I'm going to go see my friends. I'm going to go to the dungeon, up into the secret room. I'm going to have a great time. By 1 in the morning, I might be moving to Florida. Because he asked. I hadn't met him yet at 10. You know? And so I did a lot of those things that weren't well thought out. You know, I was the little girl when I was 16 years old, going to the White House as a young citizen of America, being chosen as the female from the state of Iowa. They chose a male and female from every state, and they sent us off to Washington, D.C., as young citizens of America. And we got to go on private tours, and we got to see a lot of the inner workings of the Senate, and we got to go have tea at the White House with the birds. Lucy Bird, Linda Bird, and Lady Bird. And I was drunk. I was 16 years old. I had met the boys from Virginia. I had slammed down I don't know how many beers in this second floor where we were, which was, there was nobody. It was like a deserted building. I don't know how we ended up there. I'm the only female. It was all these boys from Virginia, and we were drinking. And then I had to go back and put on my white gloves and my little patent leather shoes and matching patent leather purse and go have tea at the White House, and I was drunk at the White House. I am a young citizen of America, closing my eyes as I walk through the reception line, trying not to trip over myself. And there was still promise for me, I guess. I was a nice Catholic girl until I discovered boys. I don't know if you identify with a lot of potential. I come from a family where my older sister's a Mensa. She's very bright. She saved me from a fire when I was, I don't know, 10, 11. How do you compete with that? You just can't compete with that. She gets a national award. All our pictures are in the paper, and Miss Perfect. And then, you know, my younger sister was 2 or 3 and got a nurse kit and wanted to move to Alaska and be a nurse, and that's what she did. That's what she did. And my brother is getting his doctorate right now. It's just, and then there was me, you know, tripping over my shoes at the White House. And, you know, it was the 60s, and it wasn't just say no, it was just say thanks. We had a lot of fun. we took a lot of trips for truth. I started to run, and I didn't know the geographics were to make things better in different places and to start over again. And I had a big fight with my dad, and I had a suicide attempt, and the Catholic priest came to talk to me with my dad, and the priest and I got drunk, and it was it was one of those nights that my dad became speechless, which was rare. And they sent me to psychiatrists, and my sister sent me that I'm Okay, You're Okay books, and things like that started to happen. My other sister gave me a ring to protect me, and it's like, what are you guys? Just leave me alone, you know? Pretty soon I started saying, I'm not hurting anyone but myself, so just leave me alone. And how selfish and self-centered is that? Just stand back and watch me die, you know? And that's, to me, when I think of that, and I think that I'm a blackout drinker, and I've had to make many, 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 many amends, many amends. They've continued to come up as I've stayed sober. But I'm a blackout drinker, so I don't know, maybe there's 20, 30, 40 more amends that I need to make that I'll never know because I'm a blackout drinker unless someone that I run into would tell me. So that I get to wake up every day and be of service, and it's not a selfish, self-centered program. It's I am of service today, and it's not my job to judge who gets it and who doesn't get it. It's my job just to make myself fit enough to be able to hear what needs to be done, see what needs to be done. That's my job. So if I make my amends every day in the world by being of service to God's kids, whether you're in AA or not in AA, it's not my job. You just need something done. I'm not going to ask you if you're sober, and then I'll do it for you. I take my program out in the world, and I try to be of service to God's kids. And that is such a privilege because I was so shut down from everything. My feelings, my heart hardened. I had my heart broken. I shut down. And alcohol allowed me to feel from the tip of my head to the tip of my toes. Alcohol allowed me to take a deep breath. Alcohol allowed me to not feel guilty about everything I had done. Alcohol allowed me to not really care that my dad and I can't sit down and have food together at the same table because he never looks at me anymore. He just sets his jaw and looks away. We don't discuss anything anymore because I goad him. I get him going, and then I can say, see, I let you in just close enough to see my pain and to tell you what's going on, and then I turn around and I blame you. I was an excellent victim. I was really good at it, and I didn't even know that was what I was doing. I didn't know, but I knew I got lonelier and lonelier and lonelier down my road of alcoholism, and people had to go. I don't call home anymore on birthdays. I don't bother with Christmas. I'm drinking in the French Quarter 24/7. I'm tending bar. I'm dancing. I'm doing whatever you do in the darkness of the French Quarter. And if the sun is up, we're in the bar until the sun goes down. My favorite bar was the Bastille. And we painted the windows black so not an iota of sunlight could get through. And if somebody would open that door, which was like, you know, you better be quick. Wick, if that sunlight comes in. We were all like vampires, just with it hitting us. And Byron, Chris, and I were talking about how he had gotten 86 from some of the places around here, and I don't think I'm speaking out of school. I'm sure you, most of you know that, but I got 86 from the Bastille, which was very hard to do, very hard to do. I went in there to pay my tab because I was moving somewhere else. He was Texas, and, you know, we're going to Hawaii or something, you know. So I was moving somewhere else, so I thought, I'm going to pay my tab at the Bastille because I love the Bastille. And I want to go back there, of course. I'm going to pay my tab. I don't want them to think I'm skipping town. I'm just going to Hawaii with this guy from Texas who is Mr. Right now. And so I go in to pay my tab, and Billy says, you got to get out of here. The owner doesn't want you in here anymore. I was like, what? I'm going to pay my tab. I don't care. I don't want it. Here's your tab. He ripped up my tab. And I said, what happened, Billy? He said, did you see the fan? I said, yeah, and it was broken. I guess I had danced on the bar, had this long, scraggly hair, but, you know, if you take 16 hits of orange sunshine, it curls up, you know, curls up. So maybe it was curled up that night, and I was drinking, and I was dancing on the bar, and evidently my hair got caught in the fan somehow. And I broke the fan, and, you know, I remember having a sore head, but, you know, I had a lot of wake up with blood on my pants. Not mine, good, let's keep going, you know. But I had gotten whipped around, and I whipped into the back bar and broke some bottles. And that's why he was mad, was, you know, I had broken some of his bottles, some of the expensive stuff, the stuff that was out, you know. So I got 86 from the Bastille, and I was like, oh, heartbroken. You know, it doesn't matter that I don't call my parents on Christmas, but the Bastille, you know, that was my life. I didn't have people in my life that didn't drink like me. I didn't associate with people that didn't drink like I drank, or at least want to keep the party going. You know, if you were a lightweight, you had to go. That was just the way it was. You know, you fell off anyway because we kept going. And my parents came to see if I was doing okay one weekend, or I guess they were in Texas, and they drove over to the French Quarter to find me to see, I guess, how I looked. Just to see, you know, and I'm a mom, and I can't imagine losing track of where my child is. But that's what they did, because they wanted to make sure that I guess I was okay. And they found me living above the Mousetrap Bar, which is a biker bar in Lower St. Peter Street. And it's not a pretty bar. It's not a cute bar. It's a down-and-dirty bar. And, you know, you go in there to drink and have a fight. And we lived upstairs from there. And we, meaning my new love, who we liked each other for 2 weeks and hated each other for the rest of the 2 years. But nobody was leaving. Nobody was leaving, because I'm a loyal Leo. We're not done yet. So I'm not leaving first. It was like a competition almost. And he was a heroin addict, and he was always face down going, let's party. I didn't get that. You know, I was up and going all the time. And he had a skunk, and I met him at the carnival. So, the skunk's name was Crank. It should have been a clue. It's a long story. I ended up at an organic farm after they took out my gallbladder. It's a long story. And we had all this organic pot, and the organic people didn't want me around anymore because I drank too much. And so I had harvested this pot and forgot it on my dope deal during the carnival, and met this guy. So now I'm living in the French Quarter above the Mousetrap Bar with the skunk man. And I have a dog, and we get a snake just to really mix it up. And I had been, prior to this, I lived in the French Quarter about 3.5 years, off and on, but mostly in the French Quarter. Prior to this, I had been busted for drugs in Bogalusa, Louisiana. And prior to seeing my dad and my mother standing at the door that day, my dad went down to Bogalusa and tried to bail me out and couldn't. And my dad saw me in handcuffs. My dad saw me a mess, having DTs because I was locked up and I couldn't get any alcohol. And I, looking back on it, that's what happened to me, was I was insane. And that's how my dad saw me, with the lawyer he had hired to try to get me out, and he couldn't get me out. And that's a day I hope I never, ever forget how I felt. I don't remember much about what was said, but I remember how I felt that day. As I was the second daughter of promise, and now my dad can't look at me. He can only set his jaw, pull out his checkbook, and try to help me out the only way he knew how. And Many years later, when I was 20 years sober, my sponsor allowed me to talk to my father about that day. Because I did not go home in my first few years of sobriety and open wounds by making these selfish amends that I have to do. I want you to sit and listen to this. I didn't do that with my parents. It was gentle, and it was kind, and it was a loving daughter way that I got back into their lives. And it took time. It took time. So when I was 20 years sober, I got to go back and talk. When I went home, I talked to my sponsor. You know, I really want to know about that day, because I don't remember much about that day or where I was or I knew my dad was there and I wanted to ask him. And my sponsor said, that's fine. You can do that. You guys are good now. You can do that. And I said, you know, Dad, I don't remember that day. Do you? Of course he did, you know. He had to get on a plane, change planes, buy a ticket, rent a car, you know, get his checkbook out. Of course he remembered. It was states away from where he was. And I said, I don't remember much about that day. Can you tell me a little bit about it? And we talked about that day and how I looked and being handcuffed and how he felt when he saw me. And I said, but what did I say? I don't remember. I mean, did we talk? And he said, the only thing you said in front of me and in front of that lawyer was, I'm not guilty. It's not my fault. And those were my battle cries now. I'm not guilty and it's not my fault. And alcohol allowed me to just cover up all the pain that you just heard in my voice. Alcohol allowed me to cover up the disappointments and that I had a huge fight with a priest in a Catholic church in Cedar Rapids, Iowa, and I left God there. You can take your God and you can shove it. I'm not coming back anymore. And alcohol allowed me to cover all that up. Alcohol allowed me to become self-sufficient. Me and alcohol were self-sufficient. It was lonely, it was sad, and I was dying, but I'm not hurting anyone but me, so leave me alone. Just stand back and watch and leave me alone. So I'm so grateful that my parents stood at that door that day, because I remember that day. I remember how I felt when they got in the car to drive back to Iowa. I remember that I sat and ordered my rock glass full of Jose to the rim, nice and neat. No ice, no salt, no lime, no nothing. Just fill it up with Cuervo Gold. Fill it up with Cuervo Gold. I remember sitting there knocking back rock glasses full of my gold, which would shut my head off. Make me not care about that family. Let them go home to Iowa. Who cares about Iowa? It didn't happen for me. The head just went grinding and grinding and grinding, and it didn't shut up, and it didn't get quiet inside, and I didn't feel omnipotent from the spirits of alcohol. It had let me down. And there were other times in my drinking that it had let me down, but that is significant for me to remember that day, because all I wanted to do was to crawl in the back seat of their station wagon and wrap my mother's sweater around me and go home and start over, because I was that tired. I was that tired from alcoholism. But my pride and my ego, just, they were my companions. They shored me up and sat me at that bar, and I didn't, because I knew nothing would change, and I didn't know alcoholism. I did not know what was wrong with me. And I began to not care. Something happened with that time frame. Things got a little darker. Things got a little more violent. Things got a little crazier. My dog got killed and hit by a car right in front of me because I was drunk and calling her. My turtle crawled through my white powder, and I came to, and one of them was stuck in the middle, and the other one had made it through. So I had to go bury another animal, my turtle. And I took the one to the pet store in the French Quarter. I said, please take Scamp. Take Scamp. Tramp died. Take Scamp. And they said, we'll take it. It was just, I knew anything around me was going to die. And I went to find that guy. This is how I am. The guy had gotten found by his parole board, the skunk man. So they sent someone to get him, and he went back to St. Louis to do some time up in Missouri. And I guess he got out, and somebody was talking to me one night about, boy, we're glad that he left, and he was no good for you, and you had too many black eyes. And I'm starting to think, well, a couple of drinks later, we didn't discuss him leaving. We never had a discussion about him going. He just up and left. I think we need to have a talk about that. So a few more drinks later, and hanging out with my drag queen's friends who helped me pack because they were taking my clothes, and literally, and packing my car and sitting at a bar and trying to figure out what to do. And my car's packed and my apartment's empty, and I forgot to lock the doors, and somebody ripped off my car as I'm sitting in the bar getting ready to go up to Missouri. But I got in that car anyway, and I named Thunderbolt. You name these $100 cars and they last a lot longer. And so me and Thunderbolt and my cooler, of course, and my socks stuffed full of things to keep me awake so I could drive all the way through, went up to St. Louis. And I don't know how long I was up there before I finally found him. In months, I was working at a bar, working at another bar, working. working other ways too, but working and making money and looking for this guy and looking for this guy and looking for this guy. And one night, there he is on his Harley. One night, there he is, and I chased him down. And he got off his Harley, took off his helmet, and he crashed the window, and he pulled me through, and he spit at me, and he said, if I ever see you again, I will kill you. And it was glass everywhere, and it was violent, and I'm thinking, okay, I think the relationship's over. And a police car pulled up at that moment, or it would have gotten probably a lot messier. So that's the way I let go. That's how sick my pride and ego is. That's me. I just squeeze the life right out of it. If it belongs to me, it's dead. You know, if it belongs to me, if I'm not ready to let go, you know, in Alcoholics Anonymous, I've learned to open my hand. And, you know, they say it's like the butterfly. If it flies away and comes back and lights down, then it's, you know, lights on your hand again. Maybe it's supposed to be for you. But, you know, that's, to me, I'm the kind of alcoholic, if the butterfly doesn't come back, I hunt it down and kill it. You know, that's the way I drank. I drank tequila. I liked Harleys. I liked the darkness. I liked the insanity. But then it's funny how alcohol would turn on you, and it would turn on me, and I would become a sorry, slobbering, sad, shut her off, kind of drunk in the bar playing for the good times over and over and over again. And I just never knew how it was going to be, but I built my life around alcohol. I didn't go home anymore. Last time my parents came was to that apartment with that guy and the new black eye and all of that. That was the last time I saw my parents. I found out five years ago that my brother and sister were on that trip, and I don't remember them being there, my younger sister and my younger brother. And they're laughing about what happened, and they're laughing about that this guy took my sister to a girly show. They're laughing about, you know, my brother wasn't quite laughing, but he was saying, you know, I wanted to just kill that guy who was hurting my older sister because I had a black eye, but I was so little, I couldn't have. And I was horrified thinking, oh my God, that was another blackout, another self-obsessed alcoholic blackout moment of not even remembering that my two younger siblings saw all that. And more amends to make, more amends to make. I'm so privileged to be a member of Alcoholics Anonymous with the tools to live, because I had no tools for living. They were all handed to me. I just didn't ever learn to use them. They were all handed to me. And the beauty of coming into Alcoholics Anonymous on August 20th, 1975, was that I was done and that I was tired and that we all have that day. If you're sitting in the room, you've had that day. It's a precious day. It's by the hair of your chinny chin 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 you get here. It's seconds and inches. It's a gift that you don't even know has been given you that not every alcoholic gets. Many of us, and many of us in this room, and I used to hate this when my sponsor said it, but it's true, will die drunk. Bless you. And good emphasis. But I was on my way to Hawaii. I had run into, I was backpack, hat, dashiki, don't look me in the eyes, 170 some pounds, liver spots on my face, hair falling out, 25 years old. Somebody said from this bar in West Hollywood, you want to go party in Palm Springs? I said, sure, and they had Harleys. So I crawled on, have my backpack with my book called Be Here Now by Baba Ram Dass that went with me everywhere. And they left me at the nightclub. They just wanted extra weight. It was windy going through the desert, so that's kind of what I was. And I'm in a blackout. I don't remember. I come to. I'm somewhere. I'm having one of those violent DTs because I have those kind of seizure DTs where people are choking me, and I'm flopping around. And then I realize people really are choking me, and I don't have a dog to bite our way out. I'm not going to bargain our way out. I'm not going to cry my way out. I just gave up. I just stopped screaming. And that was what it took for me to let the ego and my life run out of my sleeve, because they were very attached in my alcoholism. My life and my ego kept me, I think, my ego and my pride kept me in that dark alcoholic space to the death. That's where I was going. And I didn't care. I just stopped screaming. Let it happen. And I was a victim of violent crime. I was found off the side of the road. I laid on a gurney that morning in Palm Springs General, and as I was writing my name, as they were prepping me for surgery, because my jaw was broken in three places, and my nose was broken, and I was very badly bruised and beaten up, and very lucky I had no more broken bones. They thought I was not a Caucasian when they found me. I was so bruised and bloody, and I wrote my name, and I saw the word victim in front of it. And if my broken face could have smiled, it would have smiled. It was like, oh, yes. It was like identity. I had no identity. I was victim. Thank goodness somebody knows. And this is the little girl with all the promise that could have been anything she wanted to be growing up. I had given it up at every single stop when it was alcohol or something else. Alcohol always won. King alcohol. And that's the kind of drinker I am. So for me to be sober in Alcoholics Anonymous for 31 days. I remember when my hand went down, I'm 31, I don't have to raise my hand anymore. It was like a shot. It was like the rabbit across the grave feeling of every hair in the back of my neck standing up. I beat my fist on the bar. I've got 14 tequilas lined up at the Fort Walton Beach Officers Club. I'm the only female in there. I can drink as much as I want, but I have to go in the bathroom and hit on the quart of vodka that's in my, usually tequila. It was usually tequila in my bag. Close the door in that bathroom. Nobody else is in there, and I've got to drink out of it because I can't get enough alcohol. That's the kind of drinker I am. So this program is extremely powerful. But you have to, like, be willing to give everything up when it comes to your pride and your ego. And the entryway to sobriety is abstinence. And if you would have come up to me 1 or 2 days before and said, you know, this is going to happen and you're going to have to do this, I would have said, I'm out of here. Broken jaw, wires in my face or not, got to go back to court, got to go back to these doctors, I'm out of here. But that day was a perfect day for me because I was tired. And I was living with a guy who had felt sorry for me above a liquor store where he would go buy me cheap red wine every day before I went to work. And I would stick a straw in the top of the red wine, stick a straw through the place in my wires where the tooth had been kicked out. And I would suck on red wine because I'm a drinker. I'm tired, but I'm a drinker. And he said to me, you have to leave. You're depressing me. I had nowhere to go. So I called my mother in Iowa, collect long distance with my broken jaw. And she said, Sharon, I can't help you. Try going to the Salvation Army. And right there, it hung on a balance. If my mother would have sent $20, you'd have another speaker. Right there, she said no. And I looked down and there was a phone number of a girl that was always nice to me. Had bought me drinks, had made me earrings, had let me have some of her clothes, sleep on her floor when she was moving out of this apartment. Always like Chris. And her number was there, and I called it. And she said, I can't help you, Sharon, but Suzanne can, because Chris was an in-and-out member of Alcoholics Anonymous. And that day she was out. But she was always nice to me, so I felt like I could call her. I didn't relate, this is my day, I'm waking up a drinker, I'm going to bed not a drinker. There's a lot of God in that day. There's an awful lot of God in that day. Perfect timing for me. And she had me call somebody named Suzanne that I had never met, and I don't call people I've never met. But I called her because I needed a place to stay. I had, as my sponsor said, I had no friendly direction with which to turn that day. That was my day. I cannot script that. That was just my day. And I look back on it, and I think about the little turns. If that phone number would have been pushed up on that table under the phone books that were sitting on that table, where would I be? But it was looking right at me. And it was somebody that was nice to me that I remembered who it was. And Suzanne went to work right away. She was 5 years sober in the Pacific group. I couldn't talk for the first 3 months in AA. It was a blessing because I had learned to listen. You know, they used to say, take the cotton out of your ears and put it in your mouth. They didn't have to tell me that. And Tom saw me come in. And I was a mope. And I hung my head. And my friend Marianne, who spoke up here a couple of months ago, she said, I saw you one night at Ohio Street, and I nudged my friend Pat and said, look, Sharon washed her hair. Maybe she'll make it. I don't remember. I don't remember not washing. I remember when water hurt. I remember that. But I don't remember not washing. But I guess I had washed my hair. It was noticeable. And Suzanne went to work on me, a new Duck Pond liquor store, because it was infamous in West L.A., and she got that out of me, and I don't know. I went and sat on the steps. I don't do that. I don't sit and wait for strangers. And this car pulled up, and much like Evie's Volkswagen, who I gave her 21-year chip to, she's still got that Volkswagen. I love looking at those Volkswagens, except it was bright yellow, and it would hurt to look at this car. And these beautiful, bright people got out, and it hurt to look at them. She had sent her two most beautiful babies over to get me. I know she did. And everything inside of my head and soul said no. But they lifted me up and put me in the back of this Volkswagen, and off we went to a meeting. I didn't know. I just see this church after we go to every red light. One of them turns around and shares parts of their story with me, and all I'm thinking is they talk a lot about themselves. That's all I'm thinking. I had a newspaper clipping from the Palm Springs paper in my pocket about the unemployed bartender and victim of violent crime, which was me, in case they asked. It disintegrated in my pocket because nobody ever asked. They just thought, oh, she's new, good, she looks surrendered, maybe she'll make it. That's what they were happy. You know, and a man named Chuck walked up to me and he said, take your pack off, you look tired, kid. How did he know? How does he know how tired I am? He said, stay with us. He said 30 days. He invited me to AA. And then he walked away, and he turned around and came back, and he said, no, you look really tired. You should stay with us for, I don't know if he said 60, 90, 6 months. But he invited me for longer, and I thought that was nice. So I had been invited to AA. Some man stood at the podium and waited for the spaceship to land. I remember that. And a man got very intense about a book. And he started talking about payment terms. And I gave him a quarter, and it was like, that's all he needed. He walked away, you know. He just wanted my quarter. I didn't know. I just gave him a quarter. He wrote my name, and he wrote the date of my first meeting, August 20th, 1975, Echo Park, in pencil in that book. And I still have it written in pencil in that book, which was the second edition, by the way. And if you're new, come back. Come back a little. Here you go. No question is too stupid in AA, so please ask a lot of questions. We expect you to ask a lot of questions. Shortly after I got sober, the third edition came out, and it had page 449 in there, which everybody said, oh, I read page 449, and then something happened. My sponsor said, go home and read page 449. And so I go home with my book, and I read Joe's Woes. Not Dr. Paul's acceptance thing here, which is what I guess they were shooting for, but I had the second edition, so I was reading Joe's Woes, thinking, for really a couple of years into AA, I'm too stupid for AA. I'm not getting what they're asking me. And I never asked anyone, except one day somebody gave me a book, and it was the third edition, and I happened to look at it, and I went, boy, oh, bingo, you know? So no questions too stupid. Don't sit around for 2 years reading Joe's Woes. So when they mean something else, you know? Our perceptions are so whacked. I just love us. You know, you can talk to somebody and tell them something and they'll walk away and you hear them telling it to somebody else and it's not at all what you just said. It's like playing telephone around here. So my life started with you, and I had no idea I'd stay sober. I had no idea that the gift had been given. I had no idea I ran into the best group in Southern California, which was the Pacific group. They used to throw people away there. We used to be the group that they threw you away to, because if Clancy and that Pacific group stuff can't fix you, you're hopeless. People used to literally be dropped off by speeding cars and at Ohio Street. We were the losers of AA, and I didn't know, but I fit right in. You know, I fit right in. And Then they moved me out of the liquor store, and someone gave me a sleeping bag and put me on someone's floor for a week, and then I was assigned somebody else's floor for a week, and you were loving me by your actions. The girls in the car that would pick me up, their sponsors had said, wait for the liquor store lights to turn off before you send her upstairs. That happened until they moved me out of that liquor store. I didn't understand. I just thought they wanted to talk incessantly about themselves again. But that's love. That's love in action. And that's what they did, was they saved me from myself. And I had no idea that they were loving me. I had no idea. I was so beaten down, so tired, and so surrendered. I just did whatever was next. And I'm so grateful I ran into a bunch of people. I didn't say, well, we'll see you here next week. Take care. I was homeless. They took care of me. They said, okay, we'll pick you up tomorrow for the new meeting. No drinking and using in between. We'll pick you up. Okay, we're going to pick you up tonight. We're going to go early to the coffee shop. We know you can't eat, but we got to go to the coffee shop. So be ready. And no drinking and using from noon to 6. Okay. I could hear that. I could hear that. And that's the way it was broken down, and that's the way the people were with me. And I was treated like I was something precious, and I didn't realize that. I remember looking back on a lady named Pat Hodges, who's not with us anymore, was with a lady named June Ann at the coffee shop, and it was their night to watch me, I guess. So I couldn't eat, so I would try to drink coffee, which I never did unless it was Irish coffee, but I'm now trying to drink coffee and smoking cigarettes, and back in those days, that's what you could do, you know, all the time. And Pat was talking to June Ann, and they were at the coffee shop, and all of a sudden I realized it had been running down the side of my face. I was trying to drink coffee, but the side of my face was numb. I had no feeling, and there was a puddle below me, and this was a well-lit, nice coffee shop. And Pat looked up from her conversation and looked down and saw what had happened, and I was sure she was going to laugh. I was sure she was going to pick on me. I was sure she was going to throw me away. That's how I felt about me. And instead, she picked up her napkin, she dabbed my face, she put it down to where the puddle was on the table, gave me a wink, and went back to her conversation. Loved. I felt something, which I think was loved. I didn't put a word on it, but that's the way I was treated. I hope that I never have a car too nice that I can't feel I can put a detoxing sick newcomer in the back. I hope I never ever get to the point where I am caller IDing my phone. I hope I remember what was given to me so freely that I am privileged to be able to give it back. Privileged. I don't know how I turned from this shell of a human being into somebody who wants to wake up in the morning and help God's kids get things done. Yeah, I have an agenda. I have my list. We all do, you know. But my primary purpose is to carry the message to the alcoholic who still suffers. My primary purpose is on page 77, to fit myself to be of maximum service to God and the people about me. That's everybody. That's what I fit myself to do in the morning. That's what I wake up excited about the day about. How did that happen? A lot of steps. A lot of steps, 1 through 12. 1 through 12. A lot of working with others. A lot of showing up when I didn't want to show up. A lot of my feet work. A lot of footwork. A lot of finding God. Seeking God, finding God. Seeking God, finding God. It's such a wonderful process. It never ends. It's never empty. It just gets better. My sponsor was more active than me. She insisted I do what she did. My sponsor was somebody who was crazier than me, who had to do more to stay even in the world. My sponsor laughed like a duck. Quack, 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 quack. I'd sit in a meeting and go, oh, God, that's my sponsor. She'd sit in a meeting going, I hope she doesn't tell anyone that I'm sponsoring her, you know. But Janet was good for me. Janet was louder than my head, and I hope if you're new, you get a sponsor louder than your head, because she intimidated me. I was on my way to go have my slip in Las Vegas. I had gotten this credit card in the mail. Wow. How'd they find me? This was terrific. I had a $24 a week room. I was waiting tables. I was Not telling people how I was when they asked, because that has to stop if you're in the service world. If you want to make money, you don't tell them. You just say, I'm fine, thank you, how are you, you know? And then I can run to the meeting and tell you what they did to me, you know? But if you're in service, people want hot eggs, hot coffee. They want you to do whatever service it is they're paying you for. Oh, but we're supposed to be honest in all our affairs. I was so confused that Jana had to kind of walk me through. If you want to make money, you say, I'm fine, thank you. How are you? So I'm on my way to Vegas with this credit card to have my slip. But I'm at the airport, and I think I better call her. Because if I don't call her, she's going to be mean to me when I get back. I know she is. So I'm going to call her and tell her, I'm going to Vegas. Don't worry, I'm going to have my slip. I'm 11 months sober. I'll be back. Well, they go to sponsor school, I think. And she kind of flipped the page open to baby going to have a slip, tell this story. And she told me about her friend Stella, who was a long, dark, raven-haired beauty that everybody loved her, and she wouldn't finish her inventory either. She had to throw that barb in. And she went and had her slip, and she burned up in a bed and died. Well, what our heads can do with that, you know? Burned up in a bed was louder than everything I was planning, and so I sat at the coffee shop that night, and I got a spiral notebook, and I ordered a piece of pie that sat there, and I don't know how many cups of coffee I drank, and I was so mad at her, I just wrote and wrote and wrote and wrote. I'll show her. And that inventory got done, because my anger surfaced, and it was action-oriented, my anger. I had action-oriented anger for a long time. I remember I was married 2 years, and I hit my husband on the head with a flashlight. And it was rubber-coated. I didn't, you know, he was not paying attention to me, listening to a headset. And so I came behind him and whacked him. And he's like, takes the headset off and goes, what that? You know, I'm going, oh. It was like the light bulb in a cartoon went, oh, I'm angry. I put the action with the actual word. I'm angry. I can go call my sponsor. We can work on this now. It's like as it was happening, I was there, I was present, I was in the moment. And so we started to do a lot more work on 6 and 7, finally, at a deeper level. So that's the way my sobriety's been. I've had some aha moments. My aha moments don't, you know, they can come in the middle of an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting. They can come as I connect an action with a feeling. They can come as something's coming out of my mouth and I'm saying, but that's a lie. I remember when I did that with a guy named Ramon in our group. And Ramon was, we don't know what he was, but he didn't speak English or Spanish or we didn't know. But he would sit in a room with his arms folded and he was like the sage. He'd go, yeah, hurry up. Really? That's what he would say, you know? And it's like, oh, Ramon spoke, you know? Well, he asked me about something, and I told a lie that I had been telling for years and years and years, and I circled that room. I went, you just lied to Ramon. You just lied to Ramon. Oh, forget it. It's all right. He'll die soon. You just lied to Ramon. You know, I'm circling the room. I know I just lied to Ramon. What do I do with this? You know, I'm a couple years sober. What do I do with this? So I went up to Ramon, and I ate crow, and I told him, and he said, I know. I know. You're free to go now. I never had to tell that lie again. That lie was connected to some guilt. That lie was connected to my grandfather, who was my favorite grandfather, who died in a hospital blocks from me, and I couldn't get my drunken butt over to say goodbye to him. Yeah, I got to name my child after that grandfather. Yeah, there's ways of closing the circles. The carnival. How do you make amends for ripping off kids, you know? I can't go back to all those towns, but down the road of life, I start to sponsor a nun. I know it's a stretch, but I did. I still sponsor Sister Sheila. And, every Tuesday when she calls me at the end of our conversation, I get to say, don't worry, Sheila, have faith. But she brought me back to the church, too, so I could hear peace and love, so I could let that guilt go, so I could make amends in that setting, so I could be free. So I could be free. It's all about freedom. I got to be free from that ghost. I got to be free from that guilt. I got to walk a little lighter. But Sheila, my son got kicked out of a kindergarten where he was, so call my sponsor. I know, it's kindergarten. I'm thinking this is going to be a long childhood here. And my sponsor said, call Sheila. And I went, but I sponsor her. And he said, I don't care. Take him over there. And they made room for him in the Catholic school that she was principal of. And guess what they do every spring? They have a fundraising carnival. Guess who worked on that carnival year after year after year after year? 9 years I worked on that carnival. And I was able to walk away going, I think that's done now. I bought a lot of ride tickets. I gave a lot of sweat. I gave a lot of time. And then I would buy more ride tickets. And that felt good. It was opened up to me. I was willing. It was on my list. Years later, it was presented. There was a way to do it. Just got to keep my eyes open. I got to keep myself fit so I can see what needs to be done. And I got more freedom from that. And my dad, I want to let you know about my dad, because that was such a tough one. I went home at 1 year of sobriety after that inventory, and my sponsor said, okay, you go home now and you talk to your dad and your mom and you start. And my mom was great. My mom and I are great, always been great. It was easy, and she was so loving. And I love that my mother sleeps at night because of Alcoholics Anonymous. I love, because of you, my mother sleeps at night. She's not going to worry about that phone call coming. Just for that, I'm overpaid. Just for that my mother sleeps a good night's sleep, not worrying about me, as she did year after year after year, that they would find me somewhere. So my dad and I, it was a little more stilted. It was a little stiff. It wasn't a good visit with him. And I ended up by the car, putting my bags in to go back to Los Angeles after being home probably about 10 days. And I thought, you haven't done this yet. You're going to get off that plane. That sponsor's going to kill you. The one louder than my head, the quack, quack, quack girl. I'm so glad that she was louder than my head. And it was the perfect opportunity. We were there alone by the car. And I said, I need to talk to you, Dad. And we stood by the car. And nobody looked in the eyes. And it wasn't a big hand-holding, eye-gazing thing. It was respectful of how he wanted it. And we stood by the car, my dad with his broad shoulders and his square jaw, his handsome face, and the sun beating on us. And we stood by the car, and I remember looking at my feet because I was making patterns in the sand with my toes as I was talking. I remember that, and I remember the warm sun, and I remember my father here. And I said what I had to say, which was scripted and short and simple. And he says, Sharon, I just always wanted you to be happy. That was the end of the discussion. We got in the car, and I flew back to L.A. And my sponsor said, good, it's a start. And you go home and be a good daughter every year. You remember his birthday. You remember Christmas. You do Father's Day. And he came and walked me down the aisle at 2.5 years of sobriety to another alcoholic. And he went to a meeting, and he met all of you, and he loved it. He bought a big book. He wanted to know what it was all about. And there's a picture of me at my wedding day with my head in my hands looking at my dad, eyeball to eyeball. Somebody snapped. And I remember what he was telling me. He said, Sharon, look at your life. You got it made. If you think about doing what you were doing before, think twice. That's a very much my father kind of little piece of advice. And I remember that moment because I was having the is that all there is moment. And my dad was giving me acceptance. Approval. And I'm so glad I didn't make him uncomfortable and, you know, go, yes, about time. You know, I'm so glad that I treated my father with the dignity he deserved. And Dad and I got good. We got even better because I made financial amends. I had a second sponsor who said, it's time, you got a better job now, it's time for you to start making financial amends. And so I called him up and asked him if I could pay him back the money you owe him, and he said, sure, it's this much. And he had run the calculator tape and put it on page 78 and circled it in red and told my mother, if I'm not home and Sharon calls about this, and if she stays sober long enough to get to this part here in the book, here's the bottom line. But my dad was home when I called and got to that part of my life. And he gave me the total. I thought it was too high. I called my sponsor back. She laughed about it. 2 days, I called him back. He accepted my payment terms. I was working as a travel agent. I was making pretty good money then. And my dad accepted my terms, and I called my sponsor back, and she said, good, don't be late with that check. Only example of Bill Wilson and Dr. Bob your dad might ever be, so be a good one. Be a good example. You're it for them. And don't be late with that check, ever. On time, on time, on time. And by the way, are you willing to grow through this with your dad? See, here's another opportunity a sponsor pointed out for me. That's the beauty of being directed by somebody who's been down the path, and they know what the possibilities are that you don't even know. But they've been down the path. She's worked these steps. She understands. She came back and sat on the rock with me where I was at this point in my amends and said, do you really want to grow through this with your dad? Do you really want peace and freedom and healing from this? Well, you know, you can't say no to that. And I said, okay, what do you want? She said, I want you to put a note with that check about your life, a newsy note. I remember she said, a newsy note about your life with that check every month. Don't send him the cash alone in the envelope, the check alone. So I started doing that on little pieces of paper, and she'd say, did you send it on time with a note? Yes, yes. So they don't forget. And, you know, I just kept doing it and doing it and doing it. And I don't know, somewhere in there it was easier to buy a Father's Day card in one of those years. It got better, got easier. I didn't have this cold sweat about the Father's Day card. I didn't want it to say the wrong thing. I just wanted my dad's love. I just wanted to be able to love my dad. That's all. But there was so much between us that had to be worked out that I couldn't just run home in my first year and go, well, I'm in AA now. It's all going to be okay, so get over it. You know, it's not about me. It's not about me at all. It's about this amazing fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. It's about the healing. It's about the brand new life we get. But you have to do the work to get there. It just doesn't come by osmosis. It takes that spiritual muscle, and that spiritual muscle was weak on me, and I had to work it over and over and over again so that one day I woke up, tip of my head to tip of my toes, I was full. I was full. I was full of spirit. I was full of love. I was full of God's kid. I was full. It just happened one day. Taking my birthday cake at the podium was like, I'm complete. I had never felt that since drinking. I began to become one of God's kids again, pure and innocent. And, you know, we did a lot of things, and the innocence has come back. I blush at jokes today. I feel much of the time like I'm just beginning. It's so great. I'm 30 years sober. I think 56 years old, I'm not sure. And I feel like we don't celebrate that one anymore. But I'm just beginning. I feel like I'm just on this. There's a continual heights on the spiral of life, which just get higher and better and more beautiful, and I'm never disappointed. When I get through that hallway of growth, it seems dark and hard, and you know, that husband left with a newcomer in the room, and I had this new baby, and it was tough, and you know, but I had sent those checks to my dad, and my dad called me between Christmas and New Year's. He said, Merry Christmas, Sharon, I don't want your money anymore, but don't stop sending me your notes. And we had done that. So when I went through this horrible, sad, sorry divorce, which Evie remembers, she was down there in L.A. with me, and the newcomer in the room he picked, and they're pregnant and married, and I'm crazy, and my sponsor smoked pot, and now I have nobody. She's gave up 21 years. And I end up at Clancy's door, and I don't like him, and I don't think he likes me, but I need help. I need someone louder than my head. And he was. He was kind and loving and louder than my head. And he says, Sharon, you'll walk through this with dignity and grace. And I wanted to go, you know, one finger to dignity and grace. I want revenge here. You know? But yes, here are the keys to his car, which I was going to just drive on the sand at low tide, but... Yes, I'll stop shoplifting at 10 and a half years of sobriety because I'm in pain and I think they'll arrest me and they'll call you and you'll say, sit there. So I'll give that up and go make my amends to the Broadway. I was crazy, but my mom and dad got to be my mom and dad again. That's what parents are, that's what they're for. They want to be mom and dad to their kids. And they knew I had gone through this tough divorce and they knew my little child was in a car that was falling apart. And they called me and they said, we have a car here. We're going to drive it out for you. they got to come and be parents when I was hurting. We got to paint the house. We got to buy a new bed. They didn't come and say, we're going to help you through this. They just showed up because I allowed them to be my parents because of these amends. They got to be who they are. And I think it's just about me. My dad and I got really a lot of good sharing in before he was killed 6 years ago. And, you know, when it happened, there was someone there, and I got the phone call, someone I sponsored, and I said, I didn't get to say goodbye. And she said to me, Sharon, I know your story. You had an awful lot of hellos. And let's get you on a plane. And I got to go home and give my dad a great send-off. I got to play him his accordion. I got to play it for him. And I got to be there for my mom and my family. And AA was already there in Iowa when I walked in the door. That's what we do for each other. We're a community. I want to be a good part of that community. I want to be a positive part of that community. I want to be into the action into that community. What needs to be done? Let me help. See what you can bring to a meeting, not what you can take from a meeting. If you're bored, you're boring. Get going. So my life is good. My life is really good. For the last 18 years, I've been with a man, and we just moved in together recently. he asked me to marry him, and he's sober over 23 years in Alcoholics Anonymous, and my son is 21 and doing great. And that father, we're not quite sure where he is on wife three because he left wife two, and that wife two came up to me and said, I know I can do it because I watched you. So that I thought it was all about me walking through that with dignity and grace. It was so Jill could watch somebody walk through it. So when he left her, that she knew how to do it too. And she's on my speed dial, and she gives me birthday cakes every year. And we do stuff with the kids, and we're good parents. And our kids were raised in the middle of Alcoholics Anonymous, and they're great kids. They're compassionate and loving and kind, and I lucked out, I guess, because he's 21, and he came home sober that night. He doesn't seem to have it. He looked at me and said, you wasted a lot of time drinking, didn't you, Mom? So life is good. You know, two cats in the yard, life used to be so hard, you know. But I got a dog who sits with me in the morning and meditates. And Clancy's wife, Charlotte, tells me, you know what dog spelled backward is, don't you, Sharon? Got it, Charlotte. We'll take God for a walk this morning, you know. And we've got rescue cats, and I've done a lot with you in the middle of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I've done it with you. We hold hands. We're links in the chain. I want to be a strong link in the chain. My job is just to worry about my link. So when you climb to the top of the mountain at the top of the world, don't look down. Grow wings. I used to think freedom's just another word for nothing left to lose. I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, and I found out that freedom is gained through sitting with you, through leaving my pride and my ego out the door, bringing a beautiful new God into my heart, and seeing what I can bring to the world, not what I can take from it. And I'll sleep at night because I know I had a good day with you. Thank you very much.